Cossacks. The name conjures up images of fearsome warriors riding hard across the Russian steppes on their magnificent horses. Cossack troops relentlessly harassed and devastated Napoleon's army on its long retreat from Moscow in 1812. Ivan Vasilievich Turchaninov is born in 1822 into a Don Cossack family in the Russian Empire. In many ways, he is the embodiment of a Cossack. He is fierce and loyal, brave and honorable, and he embraces the rich military tradition of his people. Turchaninov graduates from Russia's Imperial Military Academy and sees action as an officer in several Russian campaigns. He's an intellectual who embraces the radical concept of democracy, and he sees little future for Russia under the Tsar. In 1856, he marries Nadia, a well-bred aristocratic woman who shares his views. They leave Russia for the West and settle in the United States, where they become John Basil Turchin and Madame Turchin. While working as an engineer for the Illinois Central Railroad, Turchin comes to know the attorney Abraham Lincoln. He campaigns for Lincoln in his unsuccessful 1858 Senate race against Stephen Douglas. Turchin is working in the Chicago headquarters of the Illinois Central Railroad when the Civil War breaks out. Governor Yates of Illinois commissions Turchin, colonel of the 19th Illinois Volunteer Infantry Regiment, which forms in Chicago. Turchin drills his men extensively. He earns their trust as an experienced soldier whom they know cares for them. Madame Turchin disregards U.S. Army policy and accompanies her husband when they head south. She proves to be a warrior like her husband. Turchin soon commands a brigade, which he leads with distinction in Tennessee and Alabama. He demonstrates an innate ability to assess a situation and show initiative amidst the chaos of war, as any good officer should. Turchin has little use for those in the higher ranks who insist that the South not be dealt with harshly. He is a radical Republican, determined to crush the rebellion and destroy the South's institution of slavery. In May 1862, the inimitable general Don Carlos Buell relieves Turchin of his brigade command for his heavy-handed tactics in dealing with partisans and bushwhackers in northern Alabama. The subsequent court-martial in July 1862 becomes a focal point for the national debate on the conduct of the war against the Southern rebels. Newspapers across the nation closely follow the proceedings. The Chicago Tribune champions Turchin, as do others. He brilliantly uses the courtroom as a platform to plead the case for allowing fighting men to make war and defeat the rebels. President Lincoln desperately needs generals who can and will fight. Madame Turchin goes to Washington on the eve of her husband's court-martial. Consequently, Lincoln reinstates Turchin as an officer and promotes him to brigadier general even as he's being court-martialed. Lincoln is a pragmatic man. He studies public reaction to his bold move. One could argue that Lincoln's handling of Turchin and the subsequent shift of the conduct of the war is a precursor to a later, more important war measure of Lincoln's, the Emancipation Proclamation. Despite his promotion, Turchin has no assignment to a command. He and his wife return home to Chicago by train. Crowds gather at stops all along the way to show their support. Thousands upon thousands cheer the couple on their arrival in Chicago. A huge crowd fills an auditorium to honor the general and his wife. A judge declares Madame Turchin a better man than Don Carlos Buell. The Turchins are the toast of the town, and other receptions follow. The Tribune reports the firm hold General Turchin has upon the popular heart of Chicago. By the end of 1862, Lincoln removes Generals McClellan and Buell, and the tide turns, as did the conduct of the war. In April 1863, Turchin takes command of a brigade in the Army of the Cumberland. At the Battle of Chickamauga in September 1863, Turchin proves his worth and vindicates Lincoln's override of the court-martial. The Confederates are on the verge of a huge victory on the afternoon of the first day of the battle. The brigade to the right of Turchin's gives way and runs. Chaos and confusion reigns amid the deadly volleys of lead and the thick clouds of smoke. As the Confederates press forward, they leave their right flank exposed. Turchin, experienced combat officer that he is, recognizes the opportunity, orders his men to fix bayonets, and charge the enemy, and they do so without hesitation. No one in Butternut Gray is expecting such a bold move. Turchin's men, well trained in the use of the bayonet, drive the enemy back in confusion for a quarter of a mile. faltering Union brigades on either side see the turn of events, rally behind Turchin's men, and join the charge. The shock tactics of Turchin work. They end the enemy threat to overwhelm the Union line. And the Union army solidifies its position as night falls. On the second day at Chickamauga, a shift in the Union line inadvertently leaves a gap. Longstreet leads five rebel divisions in column formation through the gap, and they shatter the Union right, threatening total annihilation of the entire Union army. Turchin's brigade is hanging exposed on the extreme right of that left flank. They might be overwhelmed at any minute from three sides. Several of Turchin's officers ask him what to do, and he replies, "This brigade stays right here until we are cut to pieces. That's what we'll do." Meanwhile, during the chaos behind the Union lines, a spirited Madame Turchin, on horseback, pistol in hand, single-handedly restores order and manages to save an ammunition wagon train urgently needed by the embattled Union soldiers. Late in the afternoon, Turchin's officers overhear him tell Division Commander General Reynolds, "Surrender? No, sir, never. I do not surrender. I will take my brigade and charge right out of this." But there's no easy way for the decimated Union army to extract itself, as the rebel army has them engaged in combat. Turchin orders his men to leave behind anything that rattles and to speak only in whispers. He leads them in two parallel columns behind the Union line to the extreme left flank to the north. They're ready in a moment's notice to turn to the right and form a double line of fire if the rebels appear. The ground over which they pass is strewn with dead in both blue and gray. When they get to the extreme left flank on the north, a large rebel force appears. Turchin takes his hat by the crown, waves it over his head, and yells, "My brigade! Charge bayonet! Give them hell, damn them!" Turchin's men receive a deadly volley of lead, but they don't falter. They rout the Confederates and proceed to run over another line of rebels, dealing death with cold steel. Other Confederate units gather to meet the threat. Turchin's momentum sweeps them from the field, drives them back for a mile and a half in utter confusion. Turchin's second bayonet charge in 2 days destroys the Confederate flank and ends the last threat to the remnants of the Union Army of the Cumberland as the Battle of Chickamauga ends, a disaster for the Union. John Basil Turchin's two well-timed bayonet charges are among the few moments of offensive initiative for the Union in 2 long days of fighting. As the Union Army of the Cumberland withdraws, Madame Turchin rides against the tide to the front to find her husband. Reports are that Turchin and his men are lost. In fact, Turchin and his brigade fight their way back out, and they are among the last to leave the field of battle. Madame Turchin finds her man, and they leave the field together. While many generals and countless soldiers praise Turchin for his innate ability to lead men, his brilliance in the field, his initiative, historians, for the most part, have ignored Turchin's significant role at Chickamauga. The Union Army reforms in Chattanooga. The rebels establish themselves on the heights of Missionary Ridge in a formidable, seemingly impenetrable position. The Confederate victory at Chickamauga is a sobering reality to the North, which is still celebrating the key July victories at Gettysburg and Vicksburg. Bragg, the Confederate general, is posed to drive northward to reclaim Tennessee and Kentucky, and perhaps even into southern Indiana, where there is considerable southern sympathy. Washington recognizes the grave threat. They send Grant and Sherman to bolster Union forces in Chattanooga. The Union assault on the Confederate position on Missionary Ridge commences on November 25th, 1863, more than 2 months after the rout at Chickamauga. Turchin's brigade is in the Union center for the advance on Missionary Ridge. The objective is the rifle pits at the base of the ridge, not the crest. Turchin's men advance a mile to the edge of a clearing between the woods and the foot of the prominent ridge. Turchin recognizes the Confederates have set up a very effective kill zone in the open space with crossfire from rebel guns on the ridge from the right and from the left, and rebel skirmishers in the rifle pits directly in front of them. He orders his men to move across the field on the double quick. They rush forward through what one officer later calls one of the most terrific artillery fires from the top of the ridge that has ever been experienced by any troops during the Civil War. Turchin's brigade takes the rifle pits, only to realize there's little cover from the slope above them. Confederate infantrymen and artillery pour a murderous fire down on the brave Union soldiers. Turchin knows from experience that men who drop down under fire are reluctant to get back up and move. He makes a command decision and orders his regiments forward. The brigade roars and surges up the slope. They're exhausted. The slope is steep and a torrent of lead is pouring into their faces. Still, they make their way up the slope. Flank elements of Turchin's brigade literally run over the top of Union brigades on either side of them, which are trying to get what cover they can in the rifle pits they've taken. Most accounts of the day acknowledge it is Turchin's brigade that starts the movement of the entire army up towards the crest of Missionary Ridge. Generals Thomas and Granger and Grant are observing the attack. Grant explodes in Thomas's face, demanding to know who ordered the charge of Missionary Ridge. Both Thomas and Granger deny any knowledge. They have none. Grant threatens Granger, saying there will be consequences if the attack fails. It seems John Basil Turchin might again face court-martial, but the attack does not fail. The surge of Union troops moves as one huge mass up to the crest. Turchin's brigade slams into the rebel forces of the crest, and fierce hand-to-hand fighting ensues, as it does all along the ridge. Men in blue swarm over the artillery pieces and take them, and the Confederate line breaks. Grant's rage, of course, dissipates. The victory is won. And what a victory it is. The Battle of Missionary Ridge is arguably the real turning point of the war, not Gettysburg and Vicksburg. Because Sherman's march to Atlanta ensues. Sherman takes Atlanta and seals the fate of the Confederacy. That results in Lincoln's reelection and an end to any talk of a negotiated peace settlement recognizing the Confederate States. In the Atlanta campaign, General Turchin succumbs to heat exhaustion. He leaves the service and never fully recovers his health. In his final years, he suffers from dementia related to the heat exhaustion, and he lives in abject poverty. His devoted wife by his side. John Basil Turchin dies on June 18, 1901. His wife dies not long afterwards. The remains of General Turchin and his wife Nadia are buried alongside each other in Mound City National Cemetery, in southern Illinois. Neither ever faltered in their dedication to their adopted nation, the United States of America. Thank you.